Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Tuesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. We have good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives today. All of it brought to you today by Simple Contacts. Right now, you can get $30 off your new contact lenses by going to simplecontacts.com/martini and entering martini at checkout. Jim, let's move, first of all, of course, to our good martini. And we haven't talked about it much, but there's a pretty significant exodus of congressional Republicans, particularly on the House side. Even a number of committee chairmen headed for the exits, including the head of the Financial Services Committee, Jeb Hensarling, as well as Bob Goodlatte, the chairman of the House Judiciary Committee. But a prominent Democrat is also leaving, and this is one we are not sorry to see go. Luis Gutierrez is a very outspoken Democrat from Illinois, and he's basically the leading voice for amnesty. Gutierrez has held this seat since 1993, and he is expected to announce this afternoon he is withdrawing the nominating petitions he just filed on Monday, interestingly, and will formally endorse Jesus Chuy Garcia, who famously forced Rahm Emanuel into a runoff in the 2015 mayoral race. So for those who might be a little fuzzy on Luis Gutierrez, here is a comment that he made back in late 2015, right after a federal judge put the brakes on President Obama's unconstitutional effort to grant legal status to parents of the Dreamers. Here's Luis Gutierrez being very upset with that decision and Republicans for opposing the president's move.
The militancy that will be activated throughout the immigrant community in terms of voter registration, voter participation, voter anger at the Republican Party as a party in the United States, I think you're going to see it in an unprecedented manner. Look, you may think you won today, but your victory is going to be very short-lived, and November 2016 is coming right around the corner, and this will come back to haunt you.
Yeah, really paid the price in November of 2016. Jim, I know you would be in favor of a different Chuy being in Congress, although he's not from the United States. He's from a galaxy far, far away, in fact, but would be very strong on national defense. What do you make of Luis Gutierrez apparently quickly reversing course here on a re-election bid?
You know, actually, I was thinking about this. If you wanted to point to little-known individuals who ended up having a larger-than-expected role in setting up our current political culture, you can lay a good portion of the blame for our current political culture at Gutierrez's feet, because not all of his perspectives are off the wall and crazy. I don't think it's unreasonable to say that anger over illegal immigration can be directed towards legal immigrants. I don't think you even inherently, if you want to create a path to citizenship, fine, we can have that argument. I'm skeptical of it. I feel like it's rewarding those who've broken the law. But you can point to those people who have come here to try to live the American dream and want to figure out some way to get right with the country. What Gutierrez managed to do over and over again, probably more than anybody else in public life, is insist that there really was no distinction between a legal immigrant and an illegal immigrant. And this is just flat wrong. It is wrong factually. It is wrong morally. It is wrong legally. And the attempt to take those who want a secure border and visa enforcement. We don't want you coming here on a tourist visa or on a temporary work visa and staying for the rest of your life. We want people to obey the law. Because he characterized that position as xenophobia, because he characterized that position as hateful, that there is something morally wrong with it, there's something evil with it, that did more to damage our public discourse, arguably, than almost any other factor. That in the end, because here, if you insist that, hey, I'd like a secure border, if you call someone a white supremacist for having that perspective, then some people are going to recoil and be very upset about that. But some people might say, huh, well, I guess I'm a white supremacist. I really believe that this is a big factor of what fueled the alt-right. This insistence that really not all that unusual positions were somehow morally beyond the pale and hateful and had no place in American life. This is what is radicalizing people. This is what is convincing people. Look, if you call me, if you say my policy view is radical, well, then I guess I'm a radical. And then all of a sudden they aren't so upset to be hanging around with other genuine radicals like neo-Nazis and white supremacists and groups like that, because You've already told them that they're the devil. They see no problem in hanging around with other devils. It is the boy who cried wolf, and Gutierrez did this over and over and over again on his signature issue. Congressman Gutierrez, we will not miss you. I only wish you could have learned something more valuable from your time in Congress and how this has come to a very different election results in November 2016 than you expected.
Quick follow-up on Chewie. Jim, I realize Chewbacca's not constitutionally eligible, but do you think he'd make a good member of Congress? Sure. The standards for what we accept nowadays on Capitol Hill are pretty low.
I want to see the long-form birth certificate to see whether he is born in Kashyyyk. The other thing is, and I understand there's some controversy, he was supposed to get a medal for the Battle of Yavin, but he never did. So perhaps it was some sort of elitist princess who wouldn't give him one.
Oh, man. All right, let's move on to the bad martini now. And the term Project Veritas is pretty well known in conservative circles. James O'Keefe is the face of that. He's also the founder of that. And as we have mentioned in passing on previous editions where we've talked about Project Veritas, he was actually an intern of mine many, many years ago. Project Veritas has done some valuable things. In fact, last year during the 2016 campaign, there was the undercover video that revealed that it was actually Democratic operatives that stoked the riots in Chicago prior to a scheduled Trump event that had to be canceled. And they also said that they brought people in to create problems at other Trump events. But what happened now with the Washington Post here definitely puts Project Veritas in a deservedly horrible light. Here's the Post version of what happened here. A woman who falsely claimed to the Washington Post that Roy Moore, the Republican U.S. Senate candidate in Alabama, impregnated her as a teenager, appears to work with an organization that uses deceptive tactics to secretly record conversations in an effort to embarrass its targets. In a series of interviews over 2 weeks, the woman who shared a dramatic story about an alleged sexual relationship with Moore in 1992 that led to an abortion when she was 15. During the interview, she repeatedly pressed Post reporters to give their opinions on the effects that her claims could have on Moore's candidacy if she went public. The Post did not publish an article based on her unsubstantiated account. When Post reporters confronted her with inconsistencies in her story and an internet posting that raised doubts about her motivations, she insisted she was not working with any organization that targets journalists. But on Monday morning, Post reporters saw her walking into the New York offices of Project Veritas, an organization that targets the mainstream news media and left-leaning groups. The organization sets up undercover stings that involve using false cover stories and covert video recordings meant to expose what the group says is media bias. So there's a whole series of videos apparently coming out with Project Veritas reporters undercover at the Washington Post. The first one features a couple people who think that the editorial page sometimes goes a little bit too far in its anti-Trump content, but no real bombshells in that. The bombshell seems to be this story, Jim, where in an effort to expose media bias, Project Veritas cooked up a false accusation here that only makes the Post look good in the fact that they didn't fall for it.
Yeah, if you want to find a good silver lining to a dark cloud, I really didn't see a lot of folks rushing to the aid of Project Veritas yesterday and this morning. I wrote about them pretty critically. I braced myself for the readers saying, oh, Jim, you just don't have the guts to pursue the truth the way Project Veritas does. And, and of course it's okay to lie to if you need to get to the truth and stuff like that. And actually, I haven't gotten too much of that so far today. I think most people recognize, look, first of all, let's look back at that Washington Post story about Roy Moore. It looked about as solidly reported as you possibly can. A lot of quotes of the original accusers, an effort to go back and find people that the accusers had spoken to before the campaign, looking at court records to verify that, yes, her mother was in court in the day that she said she met Roy Moore in that courthouse. Going through campaign finance records, seeing if the accusers had donated to the rival or had any other kind of previously established partisan animosity that would justify or explain a false accusation in the Post, covered all its bases in that piece pretty thoroughly. In light of all that, and oh, by the way, the fact that Roy Moore's initial explanation was that he couldn't remember whether he had dated teenagers in his 30s, I found the accusers pretty darn plausible. Now, they could be lying, but if you're going to say that they're lying, show me what part of their story doesn't make sense. Show me what part of their story has contrary evidence. And so far, no one's done that. I mean, Roy Moore's wife said that, the restaurant she claimed didn't exist back in the 1970s. Then people went back and found newspaper advertisements for it dating from the time and business records and stuff like that. So we've caught them making false statements. No one has found the accusers making false statements. And if you really believe that the Washington Post did something wrong to Roy Moore, that's how you do it. You go out and you disprove the Post story. What you don't do is, I'm sure the O'Keefe argument is, okay, we'll find somebody to make a wild accusation against Roy Moore. The Washington Post will rush it to print, and then we'll come out and say, aha, see, we tricked you. You guys are gullible. You guys don't do fact-checking. Thus, no one should believe your previous reporting about Roy Moore. But there was a problem. The Washington Post didn't follow the expected James O'Keefe script on this. The Washington Post, at least in this story, did what they were supposed to do. And this is one of the, you know, look, the mainstream media earns a lot of its criticism. Sometimes you get something like Rathergate, which is pretty much a hoax made up out of whole cloth. If these four women were all part of some, you know, cabal that got together to make false accusations, boy, it's pretty amazing to find these women who had previously interacted with Roy Moore, you know, then showcase that, right? I mean, you know, it's theoretically possible. I'm not buying it, but, you know, okay, yeah, go out and showcase that. What the Washington Post did was their jobs. They went out and they started to fact check. And lo and behold, the person making up the story about Roy Moore taking her across state lines to get an abortion, this story didn't check out. She said she'd only lived in Alabama for a few months, but she had an Alabama area code in her cell phone. They found that her name matched somebody who had applied, who said she was going to work for a conservative organization. One of the donations matches the name of the daughter. They ask her about it. She says, oh, no, that was for an interview with the Daily Caller. She gives a false name of the person who she allegedly interviewed with the Daily. You know, look, this woman, you know, got caught in a lie. The Washington Post did its job. And what was most bothersome is that, look, we all make mistakes. We all make errors in judgment. James O'Keefe and his organization really stepped in it. And I would point out, if the name is Veritas of your organization, which was the goddess of truth in Roman mythology, then you should focus on truth, and you're not going to do, you're not serving truth if you run around telling a lie. If you're trying to spread a false rumor in order to you know, discredit someone else, then you're not really operating in the name of truth, right? I'm sure there's somebody says, oh no, it's this greater truth that the Washington Post is shoddy. But in this case, they weren't. So at the very least, James O'Keefe should say, you know what, the Washington Post was not shoddy. They did their fact checking they were supposed to do. And so far, as of this morning, I haven't heard that from him. Instead, he's got this other newsroom video about saying, you know, oh, some of the reporters don't like what the editorial page is saying. Shocking. Wow. Well, that news at 11. This is a major, major error. And I hope he can, you know, take responsibility for it and be held accountable for it and learn from it. And my suspicion, the fact that he has not done any of these things so far, and in fact, just simply mentioned it in a fundraising email, does not point to a good outcome of this. It's deeply disappointing for those of us who remember the glory days of him dressing up like a pimp and getting Acorn to sign off on helping people with tax evasion.
Yes, that was the dawn of James O'Keefe's political fame. But perhaps, yeah, a clearer focus on what actually is the right way to expose media bias, as you explained, by pointing out where perhaps the mainstream media doesn't do its due diligence rather than trying to float a fake story up to the top. So a sharper focus would be good. And if you want a sharper focus for your eyewear, Simple Contacts is a super convenient way to renew your contact lens prescription and reorder your contacts from anywhere in just minutes. You take a 5-minute vision test from your phone or computer. It's carefully reviewed by a licensed doctor, and then you receive a renewed prescription and order your brand of lenses. They have all the brands you're already familiar with at great prices, making vision care simple, accessible, and affordable.
Now, here's why you should try it the next time you need to order contact lenses. For starters, it's convenient. With Simple Contacts, you never have to leave home to get your prescription renewed or order more contacts. It is fast. The vision test is self-guided and usually takes less than 5 minutes. It is safe. Licensed ophthalmologists review every exam carefully. Simple Contacts offers all the brands of lenses that you're familiar with, including options for astigmatism, multifocal lenses, colored lenses, and more. Finally, the Simple Contacts exam is only $20. Now compare that to an appointment that without insurance could cost you more than $150. Plus, standard shipping is free, and all of their contacts lens brands are priced competitively.
Now, this does not mean that you never go to see your eye doctor again, so we want to make that clear. Simple Contacts wants to make sure you have periodic checkups. But if you just need to reorder contact lenses and make sure your prescription is up to date, this is the way to do it. So if you're ready to skip another office visit, here's how to do it. First, get started with the online prescription renewal test. It takes just 5 minutes to complete using your computer camera and microphone to capture the same info as an office visit. Next, see if you qualify for an online prescription renewal. Either upload your current eye prescription or take the test. Simple Contacts services most people in most states, and you can quickly check to see if you're a candidate by answering a couple of questions to qualify. Third and finally, take the online vision test. You'll record your eyes up close and read a visual acuity chart just like in the doctor's office. The test is recorded and reviewed by a physician in your state. So here's the good deal now for Three Martini Lunch listeners. To get $30 off your contact lenses, go to simplecontacts.com/martini and then enter code martini at checkout. And since this is the end of the year, don't forget, you should use up that extra HSA or FSA money you might still have floating around in that account. One more time, to get $30 off your contact lenses, go to simplecontacts.com/martini and enter code martini at checkout. Jim, let's move to our crazy martini now, and this is getting a ton of attention on the cable networks, particularly CNN and MSNBC, of course. President Trump at the White House yesterday honoring some World War II heroes known as the Navajo Code Talkers. And if you don't know much about them, they played a critical role, particularly in the Pacific theater of World War II. One of the great advantages for the Allies is that pretty shortly after the attack on Pearl Harbor, the U.S. was able to crack the Japanese military code. So we had an inside view of what their military plans were. But our code was getting cracked as well until we brought in the Navajos, who just used their own language to communicate across the Pacific, and the Japanese could never crack that code, giving us a huge tactical advantage. So these are wonderful Americans who did a great service in World War II, and some of them are still around, and a few of them were being honored at the White House yesterday. And President Trump decided to talk about the one thing he's ever talked about before, probably when it comes to American Indians, and that's Elizabeth Warren, although he didn't mention her by name. Here's the extended clip.
And I just want to thank you, because you're very, very special people. You were here long before any of us were here, although we have a representative in Congress who they say was here a long time ago. They call her Pocahontas. But you know what? I like you, because you are special. You are special people. You are really incredible people. And I have to, from the heart, from the absolute heart, we appreciate what you've done, how you've done it, the bravery that you displayed, and the love that you have for your country.
So, Jim, there's a little pause there where you can almost sense that Trump's thinking, should I actually do this? But, of course, we know about his impulse control and lack thereof. And so, of course, he went forward with it. And you could see, but from the looks on the face of the code talkers, that they probably wish he hadn't gone there. The defense from Sean Hannity and others, of course, is, well, let's not forget that Elizabeth Warren got to where she did at Harvard University by most likely fraudulently claiming she had Native American blood. And so on and on and on. She shouldn't be let off the hook. Well, that may well be true, but that doesn't mean you bring up a joke like that at a time like that. I don't think it's politically correct to say that you would probably want to stay away from that at an event involving American Indian heroes.
Don't those code talkers deserve a little better? Right. It's good that the White House is holding an event for them. It's good that they're having a ceremony. It's good that the president is thanking them. These are, you know, everything's going fine until he lets that out. And you can almost see his mind thinking like, Native Americans. What do I know about Native Americans? Aha. You know, and it just blurts it out there, and it just is. It's inappropriate. It doesn't fit there. The second thing is that, and this sticks in my craw so much, because you know, we saw the initial controversy and the fact that Elizabeth Warren had really very little ability to justify this claim. Even by her own accounting, I think she's 1/32nd Native American. She justified her high cheekbones. I'm not making this up, but I might be remembering this incorrectly. There was supposed to be some sort of cookbook, and she gave her ancestors like crab omelet recipe as a traditional Native American. I'm just not picturing the Comanche taking crab omelets out of the Great Plains. One ancestry DNA test clears this all up. And if she takes the ancestry DNA test and it's got a significant chunk of Native Americans, hey, you know what? I take it back, Elizabeth Warren. Good for you. You're totally right on this. My suspicion is she's probably 5% or less, or even negligible Also worth noting, despite her apparent alleged pride in her Native American ancestry, she's never applied for tribal membership. She's never sought tribal membership. And generally, under the definitions of the tribes, if you are 1/32nd Native American, you're not really Native American. And they this kind of irks them, as I understand it. Look, different Native Americans will have different perspectives, but some of them see it as phoniness, as inauthenticity, right? As posing as something that you're not. And that's where the humor is, and that's what's worth mocking, and that's what the name Faux-Cahontas is supposed to do, F-A-U-X, right? The idea that she is not actually Native American, but pretends to be. She is the senatorial version of Rachel Dolezal, right? Okay, that's what the humor is about. Trump never calls her Faux-Cahontas. He always calls her Pocahontas. And I just don't get it. Like, at some point by this, someone must have explained this to him by now. Someone must have pointed out, no, the joke is that she's fake. That's not that she's Native American. And Trump doesn't say that. So I don't know whether he just is you know, incapable of remembering the distinction, or whether on some level he thinks there's something funny about her being Native American. I don't know. But the fact that he keeps saying Pocahontas instead of Faux-Cahontas allows Elizabeth Warren to say this is a racial slur, this is mocking my heritage, et cetera, because you cannot say that Faux-Cahontas is mocking Native Americans, because the whole point of Faux-Cahontas is you're not what you say you are, which is what the focus should be on. So Trump makes it so easy for his critics every single day. And I just wish, like, I don't know if Kelly has to sit him down and tell him not to do stuff like that or what it is, but it just is like there are so many self-inflicted wounds in this White House that just 5% more mental discipline would have avoided. So, but hey, at least they're passing tax cuts, right, Greg?
Maybe. Unforced errors, own goals, whatever sports metaphor you want to use here. The butt fumble, the political butt fumble. I don't know.
Hey, Greg, didn't some Chicago Bear spike it on the 1 yard line this year?
That's true, after a blocked field goal, but we actually won that game. I only remember that because we don't do that very often. Win, that is, not drop the ball in the one. We do that plenty. Jim, have a great day. Talk to you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And be sure to visit our good friends at Simple Contacts to get $30 off your contact lenses. SimpleContacts.com/martini and enter the code martini at checkout. And tune in again on Wednesday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.